Fantasy football is back, and you don't want your team to suck. My favorite fantasy football punishment I've ever heard is the last place guy had to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House, and every waffle he ate was 1 hour off of his count.
I want numbers. How many did he end up eating?
12 waffles in 12 hours. I'm Danny Heifetz.
I'm Danny Kelly.
And I'm Craig Horlbeck.
We host the Ringer Fantasy Football Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.
To avoid eating 12 waffles in a Waffle House, follow the Ringer Fantasy Football Show on Spotify.
We're also brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, as well as The Ringer and The Ringer Podcast Network, where we finished the Gene and Roger narrative podcast last week. It was about Siskel and Ebert. It was excellent. It ran on the Big Picture Movie Podcast. And if you want to listen to all 8 episodes, you can go search for Gene and Roger on Spotify. The playlist will come up with all 8 episodes, so you can check it out there. You should listen to your podcast on Spotify anyway. It's a better experience. Sean Fennessy is back on The Big Picture, if you missed that. New rewatchables coming on Monday night. The 20th anniversary of a movie called Hardball with Keanu Reeves is coming up, which has a very, very interesting legacy. And Van Lathan and I are going to break that down for you on Monday night. So you can check that out. We have a bunch of Ringer Podcast Network announcements that we're going to be making this week. Looking forward to that. Coming up, this is part one of a 2-part podcast. Joe House and I are going to talk about little golf, little Bryson versus Cantlay, and the whole Bryson era, as well as we're going to do some NBA over-unders for you because the first wave of odds came out, so we're going to check that out. And then part two, which is coming up a little bit later tonight on Sunday night, Warren Sharp joins us. Me and House and Sharp are going to do NBA sleepers and grenades, the teams that we thought are great bets to either overachieve or underachieve. But really, we're just going to talk football. So this was so long, we had to split this into 2 parts. Part one is coming up with House. It's all next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, Joe House is here. Sharp's coming up in a little bit. We don't have Drunk House tonight. We have Buzz and Giddy Joe House.
Yeah.
We're going to do a little golf and we're going to do a little basketball, and then we're going to dive into the football with Sharp. The reason we're doing a little golf is because golf owned the weekend today. An unbelievable, whatever the BMW event is called, with the cars on the tees, which I love.
BMW Championship.
I was toggling. Between that, the Red Sox were going. I was watching some preseason football, and there was this Bryson Cantlay moment on the 14th where Bryson got pissy at Cantlay because he thought he was moving on one of his shots. So he said something, and then it was on. And then we had one of the greatest back and forth non-major things I've ever seen in my life. It went on forever. It was 6 playoff holes. Bryson choked, I don't know, 5 times. And then Cantlay finally won it. House. Best non-major thing that's happened in golf in the last couple of years? When was the last time we had something like this?
Oh, that's a great question. Best non-major. So we've had some decent moments over the 20 months after the restart. I'm trying to think, you know, there's been a lot of guys that have come out of nowhere, a lot of old guys winning on tour. But in terms of... And there have been playoffs. Like, we've been on this incredible, unprecedented run of tournaments ending in playoffs over the last 10 weeks, 15 weeks on the PGA Tour. But nothing where the stakes were this high and the players were this good. We haven't had a playoff of players of this stature. 2 guys inside the top 10 in the world ranking. 2 guys that are definitely going to be on the Ryder Cup. They're going to be teammates. So
well, the level of pissiness that was involved. I did a rare tweet. I said after White Lotus, I hadn't seen this much passive aggressive jousting, and now this was like a White Lotus episode. It was great. I loved it. Bryson was storming off the tee right as Cantlay was finishing his drives, and at one point it looked like he walked right over his mark on one of the playoff holes. There's all kinds of shit that doesn't happen in golf. I loved it, House.
There was gamesmanship for sure. And some of it, I think, has to do with Bryson's own desperation because he has not been good in this situation this season, really since the U.S. Open when he shot 44 on the back nine. He had a chance to win the U.S. Open. He was right in the lead or tied for the lead. And, you know, there's been a whole series of tournaments this season where he's been in that position and shot not great scores. I mean, he just has spit the bit a little bit. Like, look at this. At the U.S. Open, he shot a 44 at in Memphis, Verno's hometown. He had a chance to win. He shot a 41. That was like 3 weeks ago. At the PGA Championship, he shot a 40. The Masters and the Players, he shot 38. All these are all in the back nine on Sunday. So,
man,
there's
you can see it on his face too. Yes, that's thing.
Right.
You know,
now today he did not choke though. I wouldn't say. I the only shot that was
Come
a choke
on.
Was the chip on 17. The chip on 17 was not what a professional golfer does. The putts.
So wait, to recap for people listening who missed it, three holes after the little incident on 14, Cantlay hits the par three, hits in the water, and he's down a stroke. And Bryson is basically in the rough next to the green. It's a chip and a putt, and the tournament's over.
That's a fact.
He scuffs the chip. It goes, what, six feet?
Yeah, he chunks it. It's a chunky.
It's a 35-foot chip that goes 6 feet.
He made it onto the green, but it's not what you expect out of a professional, and certainly not out of somebody that is intending to go win a golf tournament.
But he also gacked every single makeable putt he had. He just didn't make any of them. He kept pushing them left.
He had a bunch of opportunities to win the golf tournament. Now, if you are thinking of being generous with Bryson, a lot of his putts hit the hole. It wasn't an issue.
You sound like you're talking about your own son making excuses for him after some sort of youth sports event. Bryson, his putts hit the hole. I mean, they didn't go in, but they hit
didn't,
it.
They didn't go in because there was a pace problem. And Cantlay, to be fair to Bryson, had an all-time putting performance. In the history of the strokes gained putting metric, which they started tracking in 2004,
Great stat.
Was the single best performance in the history of the PGA Tour. He gained almost 15 strokes against the field by way of putting. That's literally unprecedented. And yep. You know, big balls on Cantlay. That's all you could say. Big balls.
He loved it. He was passive-aggressively tested by Bryson. And then it went back and forth, and he pulled it off. So, big picture with Bryson, because this is now, a two-year odyssey with this guy where he has become the most compelling character in golf, really at the same time that Tiger did his exit stage left for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Bryson, to me, and look, I'm sure somebody else has made this analogy, but to cross sports, he reminds me of, like, Shaq in the early 2000s or something, this overpowering center. But yet I'm in the last 4 minutes of the game and I kind of can't go to him. And it's just, you're watching it and you're going, how is this guy not destroying everybody? But there are all these other nuances to the game where in Shaq's case, he actually needed help, right? He got the help because Kobe would step up or somebody who could make a three, stuff like that. With Bryson, it's just you. And you have the situation that we had in the playoff hole today where it's the par 5 18 that I think they played par four. I think they played four out of the six playoff holes.
Yes.
And he's bombing these drives, right? He's like, fuck it, I'm using my driver. This is the one thing I'm good at. He's bombing these drives. And even like his approaches weren't bad, but then anything around the green, it's the equivalent of like Shaq being fouled in the last 4 minutes. Like it's just this hole that in golf, I'm not, you know, look, he's in the mix all the time. I'm not saying he's clearly the most talented everything but all the little stuff that makes golf great. But it's at some point, it feels like this could sink him psychologically.
Oh, well, I mean, we literally talk about Bryson DeChambeau and his psychology on every fairway roll.
You do.
And
over it's a topic.
Like, literally, because it is so fascinating. He is so unprecedented. There is an unmatched innovation that he has attempted over the last 20 plus months to reinvent an approach to the game by conquering it with length. And, you know, the big question along the way was, okay, the length is one thing, but there's also a finesse element. He had the finesse element when he won the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. I mean, he was able to hit short wedges out of diabolical rough and then make putts. But the ongoing, you know, constant kind of scrutiny is on his mental fortitude. And now I went through the numbers there in all of those significant tournaments over the last 6 months where he has not been up to it. And there's a bunch of like just background collateral damage that's out there. A lot of self-inflicted wounds. He changed his caddy. He had the COVID that kept him out of the Olympics. He's talked about, he had a take on getting vaccinated that seemed sort of out of step with the majority of thinking around the sort of, for a guy that's supposed to be science-based. So a lot of just, you know, his he's trying to do the thing with Brooks Koepka and has been on the receiving end of that. So, you know, it's a fascinating study. He really is the most compelling guy. But, you know, it would be nice to get the W's along with it. If he had won today and validated what we've been sort of looking at in terms of quality of play, if he had, you know, clinched today and took back the narrative around being sort of a choker on the back nines of these things,
sort of,
you know, we it'd be a different story. He has another opportunity next week at the Tour Championship, though.
You add it all up, and this is the best thing that's happened to golf in the last 2 years. Other
for
than
sure.
Mickelson winning the major, but that's a one weekend event that comes and goes, as great as it was, as fun as it was.
Short-lived, yeah. Absolutely.
People move on the next day. Like, to actually build, like, if you think about this almost like professional wrestling, they've been able to build this Brock Lesnar type in seemingly invincible character that you can still kind of get. Cantlay, that one par four, that 18 that they're playing over and over again, and him being, what was he, 30 yards, 40 yards behind him?
Yeah.
And yet just trying to figure out how to outwit and outplay him anyway. And I just love it. I can't remember. I've been watching golf my whole life. I can't remember another golfer whose physical gifts seem so intimidating, and yet it still felt like you could get him when it really mattered, right?
That's the thing, right? There is a guy out there who had the physical gifts that put him so far above everybody else. We felt like we'd never seen it before, and that was Tiger Woods.
Yeah, but you couldn't get Tiger.
And
that's what made him the GOAT.
That's right.
All the gifts, and he crushed you.
Yeah.
I guess the last, going back, like Greg Norman, I felt like athletically, and I don't know if the stats back this up, but just like in the moment, watching golf from basically late 80s through the mid 90s, it just felt like he was the most talented one. Like if you're just taking a talent test, he had the most, but then he's another one. You know, he was
super.
That's
gettable.
Why there's a 30 for 30 being made about it right now. You
right.
know,
he's very, very gettable, Greg Norman.
Yeah, you could get him on the anyway. The Bryson thing I think is great for golf, and who knows if we'll ever see Tiger again. And at the age he's hitting pretty soon, it's probably not happening for him anymore. But the golf is really positioned nicely with these guys.
Congratulations to the PGA Tour for getting the event in the moment that they you know, this contrived playoff thing that they've come up with where, you know, they put $15 million on the line because the guys don't win enough money through the 45 events that they play.
Yeah, they're
and
hurting.
Try and create. But look, they deliberately put it into this August time window because it's quiet on the sports calendar. And by God, we're 15 years in with this thing. They grabbed a Sunday afternoon. They were the dominant thing on television and across the whole sporting community here in these United States of America. Everybody's tweeting it. Everybody's talking it. So congrats to the tour.
Yeah, we had some good baseball today. There's preseason football. There was Little League World Series. And I was not expecting golf. Jake Paul was happening at some point. Today we're taping this late Sunday afternoon. Greatest BMW commercial I think I've ever watched. That's my takeaway from today, this golf tournament.
Think about that. Didn't you text us? BMW should give these guys both $1 million bonus.
They should. I mean,
yeah.
They got six extra playoff holes of people just saying BMW, BMW, BMW. I thought putting the car on the tee was the smartest thing I've ever seen. I think they should have had like BMW golf carts. As you know. I'm the all-time BMW guy.
You
so
are
they,
a
that
loyalist.
Was why I was watching the tournament, because I was like, I have to support my BMW guys.
A Beamer loyalist. You are that, if nothing else.
All right, we're going to do some basketball over-unders really quickly, and then we're going to bring Sharp. So FanDuel, I was going, look, we love FanDuel. Those are our people. We know everybody behind the scenes. And they were basically like, yeah, we haven't put out our over-unders yet because it's all football, football, football. We'll get to it. And I was just like, all right, guys, it hurts my feelings. I have to cheat on you. I have to go online and I have to get dirty. I have to go see a hooker to get my dirty odds.
The post free agency numbers, you know, once most of the free agency dust has settled, it seems like, have been out for 3 weeks. I've been checking some sites. There's some bets I've wanted to make.
FanDuel said they're coming, and okay, we'll let you know on this podcast when they're out. They like to get them out there when, you know, the football's calmed down a tiny bit. We're gonna still bat some around though, because the initial ones are out. Some Vegas, some of the casinos have the stuff.
Yeah, we have thoughts.
Yeah, we have some thoughts. So first of all, actually let's take a break and then we'll give you our thoughts.
Hi, I'm Misa Kwonga.
I'm Ian Wright.
And I'm Ryan Hun.
And collectively, we are the Stadio Podcast and Wrighty's House on the Ringer FC feed.
Yes, we are.
We come to you 3 times a week on the Ringer FC feed.
Bringing love. We're bringing love and football.
So if you like zooming out and zooming in on football and all the stuff around it, make sure you follow Ringer FC on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
How's that, Ry?
I reckon I'll do.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so these are the over-unders that we found online. They're right around. Some sites and some of the casinos might be off by a half win, but these are generally the ones. The shocking thing to me, the Nets are 55 and a half in that range. They have the best odds. Milwaukee, 54.5. Lakers, 52.5. Philly, 51.5. What jumped out first as I looked at this was, they seem to think this league's going to have a lot of parity this year. Because even if you go back and you look at the last full 82-game seasons, there's always teams that win 60 games. You might have two. You'll have somewhere between 4 to 6 winning at least like 53. So I looked at these odds, and then you look at the bottom half where the lowest was OKC at 22.5. Orlando is 23.5. Detroit's 25.5. They seem to feel like it's one of these leagues now where everybody's going to be between like 25 and 55 games. I'm not sure I feel that way, House. I think we're going to have some good teams.
Yes, it's the way they set the number. And I understand at this juncture, right, where it's still August. We're 51 days away from the first NBA game. I counted on the calendar I think they gave some room for some of these numbers to get driven by public sentiment, which kind of makes sense to me. Like, we usually have numbers in the 56, 57, maybe even 58 range, right?
Yes.
And these numbers look like just markers, right? Like trial balloons. They're just floating them out there to see what kind of reactions, because some of these have moved. Like, the Knicks have already moved 2 full games, and we'll talk about the Knicks at some point. But
that's why FanDuel's playing it smart. Maybe they're waiting until everybody's getting their little test stuff out, and then they're going to get it right. Yeah, the Knicks moved 2 games up or down?
Up. Well, they opened at 40.5, I saw on some books, and now they're at 42.5, what we're looking at right now.
Well, that's dumb. All right.
Which so is just still quick, fine.
Let's go through some of the teams we're not going to talk about. Brooklyn. Look, Godspeed if you want to bet on the Brooklyn over-under. You're betting on Kyrie could disappear for 2 weeks. You're betting on a bunch of injury possibility. I definitely wouldn't bet the under, because if that team stays healthy, you know, they could win 65 games. But I just don't trust it. It's not fun to root for them. That's stay away. Milwaukee's 54.5. I like that one because the continuity, but at the same time, like, they won the title. I think their goal is just going to be to get to the finals again. And I don't see them like chasing like a 60 wins. Why? You're making a face. You like that one a little more than me?
I like it a little more just because of how serious they have taken the regular season in years past. And I do think that the East is improved. So the idea that they're a tiny bit down is reasonable to me. But I think, you know, they lost PJ Tucker. Is that a loss? I don't know. But they
not a loss offensively.
They picked up George Hill, Grayson
Allen.
They're
going to miss his 0 points a game.
And at some point, Dante DiVincenzo, who apparently is a very important guy, will be back on this team. And I think they can like just cruise along to like 57 wins, because 55 wins, that's 55 and what, 27?
Great math, House. You did
That's
it.
A lot of losses.
You pulled it off, buddy.
27 is a lot of losses. You know what I mean?
So I looked at the last full season we had. was the 2019 season. The Bucks were 60-22, Toronto was 58-24, Golden State was 57-25. So those are the three teams that are higher than every over-under we had. But if you go back to the 2016-17 season, when your beloved Wizards were a four seed.
Yeah.
Congrats, 49-33. But the East was won by the Celtics at 53-29. LeBron, his last year with the Cavs, they were 51-31. Toronto was 51-31. Washington was 49-33. On the other side, Golden State won 67. San Antonio won 61. My point is, we have seen conferences when there's parity on one of the conferences where the wins come down. I still feel like Brooklyn or Milwaukee, if they wanted to, could be 60-plus pretty easily.
I'm glad you just made that point and reemphasized it, because that's the other thing. Every year we just continue to creep more and more towards the regular season becoming less and less compelling, less and less relevant. Teams looking for opportunities to rest.
Do you think that's why the wins are down? Because of the resting epidemic?
Tiny bit.
That's possible.
Tiny bit, for sure. Yeah. Yes, yes. I mean, we've seen it. There, we have proof of concept that teams will rest guys in an unpredictable way, at least unpredictable to us. And, you know, rest is important. And, you know, the league now really emphasizes the playoffs. So teams are willing to sacrifice regular season positioning for the playoffs.
And you also have the play-in tournament. So it's not like, oh my God, if we're a nine seed, we're actually out. Like, you can kind of linger around like your sad ass Wizards team did last year.
They were wonderful.
So just stay away more. I think stay away for now. I don't want to step on the 7-hour podcast we're doing with Priscilla probably on like October 15th.
Why don't we talk about
I'm just
going to
point
like.
About a couple. Yeah, I'm going to point out a couple.
I know what I like.
Well, just going down in descending order. The Utah 51.5 jumped out at me a little bit. I think it's a stay away, but that seemed high because I think the West and the league in general will be better this year. And so I don't think they improved.
I think both Utah and Phoenix are two of my absolute favorites on the board at 51.5 at what we're looking at.
Unders or overs?
Overs, because both of those teams, Utah was 52-20 last year.
Yeah.
And Phoenix had 51 wins. So we've basically like given them an additional 10 games to play with to hit the over. And I like the formula of both of those teams. Both of those teams have essentially kind of reloaded, prepared themselves to run it back. And I think the West is down. I think both Denver and the Clippers, look at their numbers. Injuries to Jamal Murray and to Kawhi Leonard means to me that the West is gettable. So those guys that
let me give those
Phoenix
numbers.
Formula, go ahead.
Denver's 47.5. The Clippers are 44.5.
I'm not touching either one of those, right? Yeah. Because I have no idea when Jamal Murray's coming back. I have no idea whether Kawhi Leonard's coming back. But those numbers reflect the softness in the West. And so the opportunity is there for teams like Utah and Phoenix with proven newfound success, formulas that work, the personnel is there for them to just go right back out, you know, roll the ball on the court and go get 52 wins. I like that for both of them.
I don't like the wear and tear on Phoenix last season, and I'm not convinced we'll get Chris Paul ever as healthy as he was last year.
But you have additional games to sort of spread it out, right? You can get the rest and still get, you know, to that 52 win.
I get it.
Threshold. That's all. That's my thesis. That's all.
Here's what matters in the West, because we're going to see way more resting. But you still want to be one of the top four seeds. You still want home court in round one. So the Lakers are the top right now in the West. They're 52.5. They'll be in the top four unless they have another injury epidemic. And then you figure Utah, with the infrastructure, will be somewhere between like 48-52 wins. I'm less bullish on Phoenix than you, only because I do think there was real wear and tear on them from the playoffs last year. But then you have you mentioned Denver and the Clippers as teams that dropped because of injury. But you have Golden State coming back. Now, they're saying Klay's probably not going to be ready till Christmas. And they're going to have a lot of young guys. So initially I was like, oh, I'm going to love the Golden State over. But 49-33 would have to beat it.
I don't love it.
I think that's a stay away. They're working in a lot of young guys at the beginning of the year. And then Klay's basically playing 2/3 of the season. Then you have Draymond torching Steve Kerr and Bob Myers. That's a bad start. So
you don't like that? Like,
that's a stay away too. The first West one, so you said you liked Utah and Phoenix. The first West one I really like is Dallas. Dallas is 47.5. And that, this is a whole package thing to me. I'm not allowed to bet on the MVP because I have an MVP vote. Luka has the best MVP odds. He's the only one lower than 5-1. I think he's plus 440. Porzingis is healthy, we think. They improved the team.
Did they?
I feel like they did. I think they added better shooters. And I think the Carlisle thing was getting weird. I think that whole situation with the front office, all that stuff. I just feel like now it's like it's Luka's team. We gave him an extension. We're going to have a drama-free year, basically. But this is really a Luka bet. If he's great, we talk about this every year we do over-unders. If he's great and he's going to be healthy the whole year, then that should be worth 50 wins. The question for me is it like where Giannis got to 3-4 years ago, where it's like, if we have this guy on our team and we're healthy, it's a rule we win 50 games because we have this guy.
So I'm feeling impatient, and I'm going to just acknowledge up front that it's ridiculous to be impatient about Luka because he's, what, 24 now?
Yeah, this is year 2018 draft. This is year 4. Year 2 was interrupted, and yet last year they had all the shit. They had COVID stuff. They had a bunch of injuries start of the season. Remember, they were like, what, 8-15 at one point? And then they were like a 55-win team from that point on.
Yeah, but they needed it to be to get into the playoff position that they had, and they lost in the first round of the playoffs again, and he showed up out of shape because he wasn't prepared.
Well, but you can't blame him on that, though, because they didn't know the season was going to start that fast.
It is what it is. He had the lowest MVP odds last season as well and was not really relevant to the conversation. I mean, there was a little murmur in the second half because they went on the tear that they went on. But Dallas needs to show me. Like, that to me is a stay away. I understand the point you're making if, indeed,
all right,
you believe that he is going to win the MVP this year, then that number is an achievable number. I just need to see it out of them. They got to do something. One time, Dallas, do something.
I think they'll be better. And I think they were basically a 50-win team the last two-thirds of the season last year.
Okay.
That's my case. Denver, Atlanta, 46.5. That one seemed... that Atlanta and Boston at 46.5, both of those seemed high to me. Now, I know Atlanta's another team that, what were they, 30-11 down the stretch or whatever? And
yes.
You know, but not having a Kwangu, he's out for most of the season, it looks like. And then, you know, they got a couple guys playing for new contracts,
but Hunter's coming back. I mean, they that tear that they went on was mostly without Hunter, and they were entirely without Hunter for the playoffs. I mean, did he played two games even?
So if we think Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly are the top three in the East, barring some sort of weird Simmons trade, and Philly's over-under is 51.5, that's a stay away because we have no idea where Simmons is going.
That's right. And we have no idea how many games Embiid's going to play.
The four seed, Vegas is saying Miami at 48.5 is the best bet to be a four seed versus Atlanta at 46.5. Your point earlier is the point. The East is just better. The East, which usually had 6-7 shit teams, now has 12 good teams, or 12 decent teams, I should say. Or yeah, 12 teams that at least night to night are going to stick up for themselves and play pretty well. And I like the Miami 48.5 a little more than the Atlanta 46.5. I don't really like either, though. At this point, I wouldn't bet on either. The 40.5 seems high to me for Miami.
Well, I mean, it depends on... It depends on whether you believe what kind of upgrade are you going to build in with Lowry. And a big part of that is your view of that Lowry Jimmy Butler chemistry. Like, how much do you invest in that intangible?
I would just rather bet on them to like win the division or win the East than I would for the over, because the wins, I'd say it's going to be minus 110, minus 115, even whatever it is. I'm not really getting odds, and for them to go 49-33 would mean that Lowry stayed healthy the whole year and a couple of their other, you know, bench bets came through and stuff like that. I think the East is going to be good. The 46.5 for the Celtics seems too high to me too.
I agree with that number being too high for the Celtics. I don't think that the Celtics got better in the offseason.
If you told me we're going to go 46-36 next year, I'd take it right now.
I've been all of the moves that the Celtics have made in the offseason with Brad Stevens as the GM have led to some very funny text exchanges amongst our group where I've had the rare opportunity to refer to him as Brad Stevens Grunfeld, because a lot
I didn't appreciate that at all.
I'm just telling you, a lot of these moves, these feel very familiar to me. Oh, Josh Richardson was good 3 years ago, right? We saw him be good in Miami, so he'll come here and be good, won't he? Al Horford's 35 years old and contributed to us, you know, a few years ago in the playoffs. We can rekindle that, right? Now, Schroeder, you got three. That was a steal. That's fine.
As long as he's not a dick in the locker room.
Best of luck.
Every move they made was a move to have a tradable contract. Like, I'm not making an excuse. I'm not trying to spin it. Like, they're trying to construct this roster where if somebody becomes available, they can make a move. And they have a bunch of tradable contracts. Robert Williams at $12 million a year. Marcus Smart at $17 million. Horford's contract you can buy out next year. You go on and on. They're waiting to trade with your guy. With your guy, Tommy Shepard, the above the rim star, Tommy Shepard.
It ain't happening.
As soon as Brad goes on the market, eBay, we got our bid ready with a lot of picks.
That's a miscalculation about what the ultimate goal here in Washington is. Let's blow through. Yeah.
Give me your single favorite.
Don't go through all of my absolute favorite.
No, we're not going through
favorite.
All of them.
Thank you. This is perfect.
We got to save it for Russillo. We're going 7 hours on like October 14th. So I don't want to step on it too much.
The Indiana Pacers over 42.5 is by far my favorite number on this board.
Loved it.
If FanDuel, well, I don't want to say this. I'll just leave it at that. I'm enthusiastic. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything about what my goals are, my intentions, what I think should happen in the marketplace. I just would like to observe that I think the Indiana Pacers are well positioned to have a good season. In 2021.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Can they go 43-39? Yes.
I believe so. That's all I'll say.
Pretty crazy that they had the same over-under as the Bulls, who are really a serious threat to give up 160 points in a game.
It's going to be...
That's a team. Any scorers marking that Bulls game be like, oh, I might be able to get 70 in this one.
You had the homie Jason Goff on Friday. Yeah. Just brilliant. The cocaine 80s are back, baby.
I know. I loved it Jason so Goff much. Nailed it.
Yeah, he killed it with that Bulls. They ain't playing no defense. It's going to be terrific. I can't wait to watch this Bulls team.
I love Pacers 42.5. I'm glad you agreed on that one. Minnesota 33.5. There's going to be three or four shit teams just by rule in the West. I don't know how Minnesota's better.
Yeah.
I don't like their team. I don't think it's well constructed. I just feel like that was one that jumped out as too high to me. But my favorite one, House, is the Orlando Magic at 23.5 under.
You're gonna play that under, like
that to me is the most logical, easiest under that I've seen in a couple years. How is that team gonna be good? They have a bunch of dudes coming off knee surgery, a bunch of forwards who all play the same position. And a backcourt of, I like Suggs, but it's like this weird, super young backcourt of Suggs and Anthony and RJ Hampton. They have a new coach who's never coached before, who if he was a good coach, I feel like Dallas would have hired him, Jamal Mosley. Dallas was like, cool, let him go. And they have an obvious incentive to play for a number one pick. Like Detroit doesn't have to tank, right? They got Cade. Houston might end up tanking inadvertently.
I like
26.5.
I think I like the Houston under too. As long as John Wall's on Houston, I like that under.
But Houston, at least they already got their prize. Orlando hasn't gotten their prize yet. Suggs is like a semi prize, but
they have
a chance to be the number one pick.
Yeah, I like where you're going with this one.
Because OKC is a stay away because they have SGA and Dort, and they'll have guys that actually try.
I have another one on here I don't want to talk about because I'm very nervous now after we talked about Indiana that we're going to wake up later this week and the numbers are going to be in places that we're
just
uncomfortable
with. Just give it to us. Give it to really people
like,
on it.
I really like Cleveland. I really like what Cleveland did.
You like
really,
the over. I do too.
I like them adding Markkanen.
Me too.
I believe in Jared Allen. I think
I love Mobley was my favorite pick in the draft.
Sexland is going to be wonderful. Like I think that team is all of a sudden a must watch on the NBA TV.
We agree. All right. Okay. So your single favorite over under tentatively before FanDuel post the odds is
Pacers 42.5.
My single favorite is Orlando under 23.5. Sorry, Kevin Clark. All right, that's it for part one of the podcast. Remember, part two is coming up in a little bit. It's me and Warren Sharp and Joe House talking NFL sleepers and grenades for the 2021 season. You're not going to want to miss this one. This gets very lively in a bunch of different spots. I will see you there for part two. This podcast was produced by Kyle Creighton, who loves part two because we talked about Mac Jones. I wanna see them, wanna waste time.